Hi, friends, and welcome to The Geode, your guide to modern wellness and woo. I'm your host, Stephanie Wood. I'm a mom, a veteran, and a modern mystic, and I'm on a mission to create an inclusive wellness community. A few years ago, I found myself drawn to the world of spirituality, and I loved it. But I also felt really self-conscious about what I didn't know yet. I didn't feel comfortable asking questions or showing up to certain events, and I definitely never heard or saw anyone with a voice like mine. Someone who's grounded, relatable, approachable, really funny, and also really witchy. And that's why I created this podcast. On the podcast, we're going to cover everything from astrology to crystal healing, energy work, human design, and even tantric Ayurveda, all from the perspective of relevant practitioners and thought leaders. I wanted to create a safe place for you to learn more about these contemplative and mystical practices and offer a variety of information so you get to decide what resonates with you on your own terms. I hope that you love it because I love you. All right, friends, welcome back to another episode of The Geode. Today we have the beautiful, the lovely, the talented, intelligent Tanya Nagaraja. Welcome back, Tanya.
Thank you for having me. Does that sound made up?
No. It sounds sincere. Okay. I'm having you forever because we're co-conspirators, so there's nowhere for you to go.
Always.
Maybe we could start with what you're doing now in terms of focusing on your own health. So we're 1 year into a pandemic. We've done about 12 episodes on sort of more of like the mental spiritual health. And I'm curious if there's something you are focusing on specifically for you.
Well, I just turned 46.
What?
I'm kidding. I'm not kidding.
But what? Oh my God. I thought you were like 40, 42 max.
That's right. I mean, 42. 42 is what I meant. It's all the letters are silent. 42 is what I meant. So I just turned 46.
Holy shit. Do you like your 40s? Is that like everyone says that's where it's at?
No. Oh. No, that's a lie. I mean, I do, but you know, my 40s have been a little fraught for me because, as you know, 18 days before I turned 40, I also had a baby. And that was my first baby and only baby. So he and I have this sort of thing where we are aging in space together, you know? And so as he turns six, and I know we've talked about how six is such a departure from five, and, you know, I don't think that you have necessarily those leaps of consciousness or cognitive ability, maybe decline. I don't know. But I don't know. I feel like I've been trying just in the week or and a half since I turned 46. I've been feeling like when I look in the mirror, I don't feel as shabby, you know, and I think it's just I've been doing a little bit, giving a little bit more effort in terms of how I look and feel on the daily and sort of taking care of myself better. But I think that that's just more my kicking and screaming towards the inevitable end of my life. it's just turned into, but I see that, I remember when I was a kid, I was 10 and my mom was 40, and in 1985, that was weird, you know, like to have a 40-year-old mom. There was a big deal to have, to be 40 and still be like attractive, you know? So, and in my head, I'm still, you know, insane and young. And, so I think that's, if I'm going to say that I'm focusing on anything, is just trying to remember that I'm not old or, I still got it a little bit.
What was coming to me when you were talking also is I wonder if certainly something happens when you hit your 30s, I think, especially also as you become a parent, that, you know, you kind of get into like maybe like a health kick, spiritual kick. But then in your 40s, you're kind of like, meh, this is who I am. This is what life is. So you may be over the hump of like trying something to.
Yeah, I don't feel like in my life I've ever had the luxury for really any in-depth spiritual exploration. You know, I think I've always been kind of trying, you know, it's hard enough for me to focus on one thing. this is enough. Like, no, but, so I feel like, maybe, and this podcast too, it's a good way to kind of tie that into coming to the 13th episode of this podcast is, you know, some of the things we always joke that I'm the skeptic and the Scully to your Mulder and such, but, you know, there are some things that I've learned and some things that I've, you know, just kind of, well, that's a nice thing, you know, but, I feel like, I've opened my eyes to the possibility of the movement of energy being less than what it seems to be, or more than what it seems to be, rather.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's why I enjoy interviewing you, because I think it's a good barometer for the work that we do, because you have come into this open and curious, but rightfully so, skeptical. And so for me, it's always interesting to see what resonates, because even though I am steeped in this world and I love it, there is always a part of me that's like, but I'm not crazy, right? Like, so I'm constantly looking to other people to just sort of reaffirm that I may not be as crazy as I thought. But I think it's cool that you're open to it. And I like your take on life, because I feel like I always come to you with some issue and you're like, don't worry about it, honey.
I think that's an artifact of being around dead people so much, though.
Right. That you have a different perspective for life, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely colored my impression of what in the end means, you know, what's meaningful at the end. You know, I never, you know, they used to all these platitudes about like, I never heard someone say they wish they worked more when they died. And then that's not true. Like, I'm sure there are some people that die thinking like, I should have just, you know, applied myself or whatever, you know, but
that's interesting. So yeah. You have worked, for those who don't know, Tanya was worked in mortuary affairs in the military and was a director of a funeral home in the civilian world. But so you see people living and breathing, and then you've worked with people when they have gone. Did nothing ever cross your mind like, wow, to be a flesh with thoughts and feelings and then to be cold meat?
Well, I mean, not to interrupt you, but yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, you just, you know, a lot. I'm not going to go into the whole, like, we're such a death denying culture and it's all like, you know, in your mind about this weird, these weird phobias that people have about dead bodies and stuff and blah, blah, blah. But, you never understand just how much the soul or the spirit or the animus or whatever it is that makes us living and breathing, what the weight of that is in a person until you see them dead, because then you realize it's like walking into an apartment that someone has just moved out of, you know, and it's like the nail holes are in the wall. You know, there's scuffs, the outline of the refrigerator, whatever, like all those things are still there. You know that someone was there, but it's an empty box, you know? And I think people are, the human body is definitely like that. And
I think that's so interesting. Yeah. Because I thought there's something also that I read somewhere that was like, we know the heart beats, we know how the body operates, but we don't know why the heart beats. You know, why do we exist in this way? And, you know, for some, they may be like, you know, what is it? What is existence? Why do we need to trace why we exist or where thoughts come from? But I think that we're kind of circling back to this as we become so technologically based and like AI is becoming bigger and bigger. I think what is a human, what makes a human, is becoming more and more relevant and more important. It's like holding on to text to differentiate between what is a person and why do we exist. Well, did you ever have any spiritual, I mean, I know you were very focused on the work that you're doing and the work that you're doing. You know, you dealt with people and helping them with their religions, which I thought was so interesting that you're so well-versed in all different kinds of religions. But did you ever have any sort of spiritual moment in the work? Like, wow, just something that felt like bigger and beyond you?
I think for me, it was, there were a few things that I learned about. I mean, because obviously religion and spirituality are can be very different things, you know, not, I mean, obviously the two are very closely connected, but, you know, for some religious aspects are just kind of going through the motions and doing the things, which are also very useful. I think I told you about, I didn't grow up with any particular religion. My, you know, that's a whole other thing, but, when I was a young funeral director and I was sitting in the back of the churches or in back of the chapels, I learned the rosary, the Catholic rosary, because it was like meditation. Mm. And so even though I wasn't necessarily praying to the Virgin Mary to intercede in anything, it was very much just the repetition of going through this thing, you know, 10 times and, you know, kind of moving along. And every culture has something like that. Every religion has something, some sort of meditative journey through, you know, prayer or thought or whatever. And so those things I found useful and sort of made me get in touch more with myself because, you know, I suffer from anxiety and I always have. And so those things were therapeutic for me.
It's been interesting being your friend because I was always, I think people in sort of what you were talking about before, there's like a huge fear of death. I mean, I think that's normal for most people, but when you were working at the funeral home and I would talk to you and you'd be like, oh, I've got to put someone's organs back in their body. It was a very jolting for me. but I think then, you know, there's been experiences this year that has sort of put everything into a different perspective, but I think I'm noticing a lot of people have stories now about death. I think specifically because of the pandemic. And so it's been interesting to see just how sobering this thing is that has swept across the country. I mean, some people, the death has come from COVID, something related to COVID. I know suicide is an issue right now. What are you doing for yourself to stay healthy during the pandemic?
Oh, nothing. No, I'm such a nihilist, you know, like we're all just gonna end up dead anyways. I think I'm just trying to, you know what, it's hard, you know, the pandemic is not difficult for me in terms of like staying in the house. Like I'm good, you know, right. Like, but ultimately, but that is also, you know, the thing is that I am good inside the house. And so I need to really push myself to get my face out in the sunshine and put my feet in the dirt and do those things that are, you know, conducive to a better frame of mind. I'm wearing this wristband right now that we got for Kieran, but he thinks it feels weird. So I've sort of taken it on and it's an EMF thing. It, right now I have it on happy and focused, which I don't know, whatever, but it's really, it's just giving me these little vibrations in my wrist and I don't know if it's helping or not. It says to do it for 30 days. So, I mean, this is kind of like, well, maybe I didn't immediately discount it. You know, I said, all right, I'll try it, but, it's really annoying. I'll tell you that.
It's on your wrist. It's annoying to have something.
Yeah, well, it's just buzzing. And I hate things that aren't, I hate things that are intermittent. Like some fans have settings where they kind of turn off like, beep, you know, it drives me bananas.
So your anti-anxiety bracelet is causing anxiety.
It's causing me like great anxiety. I love white noise, you know, but if the dryer is on the setting where it kind of turns off and then turns back on and turns off and turns back on, it's like the most emotionally jarring thing. So this intermittent buzzing is just really making me want to throw it out the window. But I think I'm just, you know, allowing myself to be more open to trying things to help myself, you know, with migraines, for example, and insomnia, etc. I think
that's great. I'm really proud of you. I think it's, I love that you're trying things.
How about you? What are you doing?
Eating a lot.
I mean, that's not bad. I made a cake. I've eaten almost half of it.
Today I ate chocolate and tea.
That's good.
Yeah. Something someone told me recently was you should have something to look forward to. Like that's just, you know, in general, it helps.
you know, like a lot of people when they retire, some of them pass away because like, you know, they're just used to like getting up and going to work. So I've been trying to find something to look forward to. But recently something I'm really enjoying is reading. I'm just looking for like, yeah, I think social media for a while was like very distracting and enjoyable, but it can get like even TikTok all of a sudden became, I was just getting like weird videos or like, I don't know if it picked up on something, but there was like videos about like suicide and like cartel talk. And I was just like, I don't want anything negative.
And the algorithm is weird and you can't break away. I'm a Native American lesbian, according to TikTok.
Oh, so. Yeah. There's definitely a lesbian period. There's like somehow, but I got to like book cooking, like home decor talk. And that was, I was about like really safe and nestled there. And then something like spun me out. I must've looked at something or heard something like spun me out. And then it became like very unsafe. And I was just like, and also like, I can get very into it. And there was a point where, I don't know, Shane was somewhere and the kids are somewhere. And I was like hiding in a room watching TikTok. And all of a sudden I was like, what are you doing? Go play with your children or talk to your husband. Like it, you know, it can spiral really quickly. But so something that I am trying to enjoy now is like books. Like a really good book will take you away and make you feel really good or educate you or I don't know. I find it really, really satisfying right now.
I used to read so much as a kid, and I think, yeah, I mean, I can mark the time when I stopped really reading was when social media sort of emerged as the primary method of communication or gathering information.
Well, for us also, I think because our kids are so close in age, the rise in social media also happened when our kids were born. And so I think there's also like parenting fatigue and isolation. And so it was just kind of like this perfect storm of being exhausted and overwhelmed with children and having something really easy to look at, like the midnight feeding, the 2 a.m. feeding. But it can be really toxic. It can be so great. And I learned so much and I love connecting to people, but I think it can become pretty toxic pretty fast.
Yeah. And especially right now, like, I mean, and right now, of course, I'm glued to CNN. So that's just, you know, CNN is just playing and it's like being in an airport lobby, like an airport lounge. Right now in my house. It's just like CNN is always, just always in the background.
What about from the last, so we've had about 12 episodes, I think two were us. Of the guests that we've had on, was there one that you really enjoyed and thought, maybe I'd like to pursue what they're saying, or maybe they just said something that really opened your eyes?
I will say it without even hesitating, Benita Mayo was my absolute hands down favorite. I just felt like she a few times was just telling my own story, like in terms of feeling insecure and, you know, this and that. And I just feel like she was just so personable and just honest and humble and amazing. And I just like fell in love with her. And so, yeah, Benita is my clear favorite. I think I've liked them all. I mean, I haven't really disliked anything that anybody said. I've sort of made the self or the promise to myself to be open and just listen and hear what they're saying and not sort of dismiss things out of hand, because I think that there's a validity even if it's not something that I necessarily that resonates with me. I feel like there's a validity to the things what they bring to the table or what, you know, what they're offering. And ultimately I think in terms of the different modalities and whatever, it's individual, you know, it's individual. And if the what someone gets out of it is helpful, then I think that it's done its job. And
well, that's very fair.
Yeah.
Has there been anything that you're like,
I can't think of anything offhand. And again, I appreciate the time and energy of the guests and everything. There have been some moments where I've been like, oh, really? Come on now. But I think that that's just maybe cultural or, you know, people only know their own experience. And so what they're expressing is not any less important because it's just expressing one facet of the way the world is. But I think it's important to, I think we have a good mix of people.
Yeah. You know? Is there anything that you have, either something personal or just something you read or something someone said that spun into something that you would like for me to interview on the podcast? Anything that's intriguing at the moment?
You know what? I am, you know, that I'm really into ancestry right now and finding out about my family and where, what, so let me preface it, but my philosophy in life is that every single left turn, bad decision, good decision, everything had to happen to get me to right where I am. And so I'm astounded constantly by all of the people that had to cross paths and all of the relationships that had to form and all of the things that had to occur for me to be just like sitting in my house in San Francisco, eating a burrito and waiting for you to call. You know, and papalote. I think that the practitioners that have a focus on understanding generational trauma, releasing those things, I think those are some of the things that I would like to hear more about. Maybe some past life stuff. You know.
Same. And that was something that you told me recently that I really love. And I think about very often was the ship of ghosts that passed, mm-hmm. that parallel your life to. And I think about that. It's like when you take that right turn instead of that left turn, or you don't call that person back, or that job you turned down, like what lies on this ship that passed? Like, can you explain that ghost ship? I think it's
really fascinating. Oh, yeah. Well, that was in... So Cheryl Strayed, I think she said that in the book Dear Sugar, she talks about someone telling her about this. And it's just that, you know, there's two ships, and I'm going to mess this up, of course, but there's two ships and you're on one ship and the other ship is a ghost ship. And on that ship are the hopes, the dreams, the unborn babies, the everything that didn't happen or happened in a way you didn't expect it to is there, and you don't know the destination. You can only be on your own ship, you know? And I think that that's,
I think that's really fascinating. And the opposite end of like these people who made these sacrifices. So you can be in San Francisco eating a burrito and I can be in Virginia and not, you know, like we have a similar background because I'm Jewish, mm-hmm. that, you know, what sacrifices had to be made in order for there to be this branch on the tree, mm-hmm. still. And the same for you. I know yours is really complicated and will one day be like a Lifetime movie.
Well, you know, I mean, especially, and I know how you feel about DNA tests. I'm not even going to get into that, but I think that for you as a Jewish woman, you have this incredibly rich, beautiful, 2,000 years of beautiful tradition, as they say in Big Lebowski, behind you. And it's sort of, there is sort of like a curtain between you and previous generations, I feel.
Yeah. And I have had to, like, I do feel strongly that there's some element within my mother's line that had some relationship with the mystical, mm-hmm. occult. Like, I don't want to say that they were witches, but I think there's something there. And I have been fascinated in trying to trace that line, mm-hmm. to where something happened that turns the next generation to be like, we absolutely will not ever talk about this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's so, you know, it's funny how deep and abiding our dedication to amnesia is in not us or, you know, even our parents or whatever, but it's just that sort of, you just close the door and forget it. And the next generation knows nothing. And then the next, it just gets farther and farther and farther away. And it's amazing to me, like, as I peel back these layers, like, what, how come everybody's not talking about this? Like every single day, you know, I just don't understand. And so for that, I can, yeah, it's, it's, you know, and I know that you probably feel like those ancestors are calling to you a little bit, you know.
I definitely want to find a way to pursue it. It's a little difficult because most of our records,
yeah,
you know, they are like hidden or burned, but it is fascinating. And I know that it's opened a lot for you and, you know, we've talked about this before also with epigenetics and everything, like mm-hmm. how much, you know, that some of the things that we are dealing with are just the way we are, like our biochemical processes operate, and that it's not that I'm not good or normal, but that there's just not as much serotonin or, you know,
right.
And I think it alleviates some of the pressure that people put on themselves about why they can't respond in ways that other people respond, when it's like, well, cause you know, maybe you were used to being in a different country and your body responds differently. And somehow for some reason there's a genetic process within your body. But yeah. And I think that, I'm also interested in also like generational trauma and, you know, everything that's surfacing in America now, I think is also just like hundreds of years of unhealed trauma mm-hmm. in indigenous people, in Black people who were brought here, you know, and are now dealing with the generational trauma from people hundreds of years ago, and how that bubbles up and surfaces into just chaos, and that, and all that deserves to be resolved.
Yeah, and for healed. for sure, because it just perpetuates otherwise. And I can see in my own family, you know, I mean, like I can spot the people who have the same issues that I do. I can spot them. Oh, right. I can spot yeah. them from 200 years away, you know?
Yeah. And we've spoken about this also, where there have been some things I struggled with, and you're like, well, imagine if like our parents had Wellbutrin,
oh, yeah.
and for that period of manic depression, mm-hmm. they could have been, or they had some sort of energy healing, or, you know, like imagine if part of the part that they can't control, they had some way to alleviate, and what that would have done for that next generation.
Or for men, you know, just saying, it's okay for you to talk about your trauma. It's okay for you to express right. this. It's okay for a father to hug his son. You know, it's okay for all of these things to happen. It's normal to
ask for help.
Yeah. To need people, to not be ashamed of who you love or who you are inside, or yeah, it's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And I think part of what I've learned from everyone, and something that is really coming up for me, is I don't know the best way to explain it, but not like an onion, but more like an echo, like how vast and complex there are layers of echoes around us that, and I think like part of being human is like, it's not perfect. Like it will be difficult, but I think there's a certain level of pain and a certain level of difficulty that is normal for life, and that anything beyond that isn't necessary. And that's what I think I'm looking for within this podcast, is people who have more than what I think is a normal amount of pain of being a flesh individual, mm-hmm. and how we can help people who are really in a lot of pain, which I've been at different phases of my life, and I found things that have helped me. But within the research and the people we speak with and the stuff that comes up and people I've had as clients, just the depth to which these things can like echo around and near it, is something that's like been bubbling up for me, is like, I don't know. There's just like something there for me. There's just something that I read recently that I was like, wow, there's really a lot. And I don't think we could go into all of these echoes and heal everything, but that maybe there's more of a balance that we can bring, but that the balance isn't just talk therapy, that balance isn't just Reiki, that there's really a lot to it. And I don't know if maybe there's like a collective healing that has to happen and individual healing, but that's something coming up for me recently that I'm just really fascinated with, and to see kind of how that opens up and evolves.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that made me think of something that I've really appreciated about all of the guests that you've had, in terms of finding healing for mental or spiritual or anything kind of trauma that they're feeling, is that we haven't had one guest that's been really dismissive of any other sort of method of healing or, you know, nobody's been like, just use the oils. That's all you need.
You know? Right. Right. Yeah. Everyone's and I appreciate
been that. Been very
yeah,
open right. and understanding and like, cognizant of the fact that science actually, you know, has some validity in this world. And I think that that's been really a good thing. You've had really, really good people in terms of, open-mindedness and openness to, they I think that they all kind of leave you to make your own conclusions. None of them have really put the hammer down as far as what is completely true and what is completely not true and what the possibilities are. And so I think that that's really a good thing for people.
Yeah. And that, and also you and I, we don't, how whatever path a person needs to take in order to feel good, we do support that. If you want to take prescribed medication, you
which
know,
I do.
We're not yeah. against it. Right. I am currently at the moment taking something because this year has been really rough. And there was a period where it was just really weighing on me. And I felt like it was the right thing to do for my family. And so I do as much holistically as I can, because I do believe in that. But I also believe in finding things. I also believe in not making yourself suffer for the sake of being able to say that you're completely holistic.
Oh yeah.
Which I wonder.
Well, I mean, that was trauma for me when I was a new mom, you know, I mean, just the desire to want to say that I did breastfeeding completely naturally and all of those things. I damaged myself so profoundly trying to attain that. And so I think that it's really important to keep those things in perspective. That's really good.
Absolutely. And to do what you need to do, that a suffering now isn't necessary. And it may feel like I don't need it, but these things compound and you don't know how they will surface later. And you don't know how they will reflect in another generation or in those around you. And that absolutely the most important thing is to be in a state where life is mostly pleasant, occasionally not so great. And I think that's basically anything other than that. I think something should.
Yeah.
And there's
a big difference between discomfort and agony. You know, I mean,
correct. Yeah.
If you're not wanting to live every single day because your brain is just continuously, you know, telling you that there's no hope, there's nothing. And if you can sort of identify that might be a chemical reaction to, you know, not enough of this or too much of that, to ignore that is ridiculous. It's just, for me, it's ridiculous. It's, you know, everyone's free to make their own choices and go on their own paths. But, I think that, if for me, what I've sort of come to is that if there's a solution, it's not cheating, it's not failing. It's just, if I want to be alive to see my son grow up, then I have to take this pill, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I commend you for that. And you helped me because I was struggling with whether or not to start recently. And I think you made a really good point of like, imagine if our, you know, how could this have helped us if generations before mm-hmm. had these, and also like, if you need it, take it. It's just don't make yourself suffer for the sake of not feeling some sort of way about it. But I'm excited about the next few people that we have on and sort of the trajectory you and I have discussed about where we'd like to go, highlighting more people, indigenous or people of color. And I'm looking forward to where this goes, because for us, I think our biggest focus is on how can we expose people to as much as possible to give them the power to make a decision to not live in agony. And I think that's kind of always been our goal, even with Rose and Candy. Yeah. Is like you don't have to suffer alone. You don't have to suffer at all, and you don't have to, you know, paint a smile on your face when inside your insides are crumbling because you have PPD. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is power in being open and being vulnerable and pursuing something that can help you, that will eventually help and ripple out to those around.
For sure. One of the things that I've been doing the last few days, it's kind of been taking up a lot of my time, is I had to put together a presentation about AI for mental health, like a chat, you know, and I had to look at it from a critical thinking perspective as to what would the questions be for the people who are either uncomfortable with technology in terms of a medical application, or fearful of privacy concerns or things like that. And along with the empirical evidence that shows that this is a helpful thing and so forth. And I think that there's a lot of possibilities to find balance within our minds, and I think that just being open to all of those things, whether it's an AI chatbot or whatever, nothing replaces a real person, but sometimes anonymity is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah. Or and I believe in meeting people where they're at. If you're not at a place that you feel comfortable meeting with a person and opening up about your trauma, but texting something feels safe to you.
Yeah. Cause I can't, I was talking to another friend. I do have a few other friends.
They don't sound beautiful.
They mean nothing to me.
She sounds hideous. Good.
Well, he was saying that, it's hard to find a therapist because you just end up like wasting so much time talking about your mother. You know, it's like, how many times can I tell the same story to different therapists until I find the right person? And it just takes up so much time. And so I feel like that's definitely a thing for me. Like, I am always looking for a good shortcut. And I think this might be something I might be able to use in order to
not pay someone
to tell the same story about my mother over and over and over again. I mean, seriously, when I was in, you know, I came back from Afghanistan, I was all like war trauma and dead bodies and everything. And I was like, you know, and then my mother in therapy. And so I was just like, oh, that probably wasn't like the best use of my time. But, that's all the things. It's like, what wires us in the beginning to process trauma or sadness or disappointment or whatever is the way we're going to process all trauma throughout our lives, you know? So I guess it is, everything does relate back to your mother, which also is a lot of pressure. But I think.
Right. But one wound impact, I mean, and I've noticed also, like, sometimes, you know, if it's so fresh, it's hard to talk about, but there is this spillover of, you know, maybe before there would have been things that you could tolerate, where now you're like, your trauma levels are like seeping over the top, and like this stuff unrelated to the specific issue are problems because you're so maxed out.
That's what we were just talking about generationally. I mean, at least, you know, we're self-aware enough to be like, well, that's likely this trauma, you know, but, yeah, I think that's probably, you're exactly describing what we were talking about people that didn't have the resources or the support structure to talk about these things or to figure out why they dealt with things the way that they did, which again, you know, expressed itself through behaviors and actions and abuse and intolerance and things like that. And for sure. I guess self-awareness is the key.
Mm-hmm. Self-awareness and I guess the courage to expand on it and explore it. But you're amazing and I love you and you're doing great.
Give me some wisdom. Give me some wisdom.
I'm Stephanie Wood, and you've been listening to The Geode, your guide to modern wellness and woo, the podcast. You can follow us on Instagram, and if you haven't yet, please go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review us. You can join me next week for another fun conversation. Until then, I love you.